Soil and organic carbon comprises roughly a third of the total soil carbon pool worldwide. And it occurs as calcareous soil horizons, calcic horizons, and petrocalcic horizons. The overarching research question in this project was, can the spatial distribution of soil and organic carbon be predicted from what we know of the processes of carbonate storage and transport?
Could you move the microphone
closer? Sure, is that better? The way we answered that research question was developed a process-based model of petrogenic carbonate accumulation that accounted for topography and soil properties such as texture. And then we compared these model predictions against actual field data. The study site is in the southern Fry Mountain in the southwestern part of the Mojave Desert. And this study focused on the Piedmont lying between the playa and the uplands, between the Fry Mountains and the Soggy Lake Playa. The mean annual precipitation for the site is roughly 76 to 127 millimeters of rain, largely coming in the winter months. Now, the processes that govern the storage and flux of carbonate minerals, like Brenda mentioned, is largely water, which is influenced by infiltration and runoff and run-on, all influenced by topography and soil properties. Wind moves minerals that, such as calcite across the landscape in the Mojave by dust. And also solar radiation is a driver in this process of accumulation, which affects evapotranspirational demand. And as Brenda mentioned, you don't have any carbonate precipitation unless you have CO2 being evolved from plant roots. And then, of course, soil chemistry is influenced by the biota in the form of pH. So we came up with a slick model, soil landscape inorganic carbon model. We think it's slick, which was coded in R. So I'm going to spend just a few slides talking about how the model works and the inputs into that model. Carbon accumulation, the model accounts for carbon accumulation by considering the soil to be a sequence of equivolume compartments that are divided between the aqueous phase and the mineral phase. Water and dust move into the top compartment. And then the solubility of calcium is calculated to represent as a proxy for the aqueous solid transfer of calcium carbonate. Then the solutes are moved by gravitational flow. After the water holding capacity of each compartment is exceeded, it moves to successively lower compartments. Evapotranspiration is the way water is lost from the compartments. Water is taken out of the top compartment to successively lower compartments until that evapotranspirational demand is met. And water is also lost through leaching. Carbonate chemistry is modeled by assuming that the system is a pure calcite system and uses a model from McFadden and Tinsley where the molality of calcium in solution is related to the partial pressure of CO2 for that compartment, the equilibrium constants for the carbonate system, and the activity coefficients for calcium and bicarbonate. The model allows the users to specify a different formulation of this used by Larry Mayer in CalSoil. The only difference between these two is that the activity coefficients in CalSoil are assumed to be unity. And there's also the ability to use, the user can specify using the CalDep formulation where there's more of an explicit treatment of the pH in that formulation. Carbon dioxide increases in the soil with depth, and there's differences depending on what season we're looking at. So we used a data set from Terhune and Hardin, but the model allows for a similar data set by Amundsen et al. And also Parada et al. I should mention that the Terhune and Hardin site is in a Mojave Desert soil in southern Nevada. Atmospheric conditions were modeled using remote automated weather station data about 11 miles from the site. We had precipitation, temperature, and solar radiation data hourly for 11 years from the beginning of 1996 to 2006. Using this data, we developed a precipitation model based on a recommendation from Peter Dunn in 2004 in the Journal of Climatology, where we used a Poisson gamma distribution, sometimes called a compound Poisson distribution, where the quantity of each event, a precipitation event for each month, is represented by a gamma distribution, where mu is the mean quantity for that month, and the sigma squared is its variance. The number of events per month is modeled from a Poisson distribution, where lambda is the mean number of precipitation events for that month. It's a stochastic simulation, and temperature is modeled using a sine function, also a stochastic simulation. Potential evapotranspiration is calculated using the Jensen and Hayes method developed for work in the southwestern U.S., but the user can also specify the Hammond method in a more humid environment. So this is an example of the data that we get for the Poisson gamma simulation for rainfall. The blue plot is the actual raws data for, I think this is 10 years, and below that is the Poisson gamma simulation, which show, not to match the raws data exactly, but to show a similar pattern of precipitation that's modeled daily for the course of the simulation run. This is a 5-year temperature data from the raws station. And this is in blue is an overlay of the model predictions. So landscape topography was information was gathered from an IFSAR digital elevation model, where the landscape position was calculated using topographical index calculations. And this calculation uses a contributing area, and that contributing area was calculated in the model using a steepest descent or D8 algorithm. Water is redistributed across the site after some precipitation threshold is met. In this way, we could crudely estimate or crudely simulate precipitation excess overland flow. This is a histogram of the topographic indices for the site, and the model, very briefly, assumes that low topographic index values will shed water and high topographic index values will collect water. The time length, the time to run these models were determined by optically stimulated luminescence datings, and this is a dating technique where samples are shielded from light and then run in a dark room, prepared and analyzed in a dark room, and this is me hard at work in the dark room. The dust is a crucial part of this model, and so we sampled six locations across the study area, where between 2006 and 2007, and the calcium carbonate flux was measured. The lowest value was about half a gram, and the highest value was 3.5 grams. And the reported values in the literature from Mara-3-Heis are about 0.7 to 4 grams, so this fit fairly well within that range. Okay, now comparing our predictions from what we actually got in the field, this is a plot of the Piedmont part of that the diagram I showed earlier, where the Fry Mountains are to the north and Soggy Lake Playa to the south. We sampled four soils on this Piedmont as a way of example for the results that we get for this model run. I'll just show soil one. Initial calcium carbonate content for every compartment was assumed to be 0.03 grams per cubic centimeter, and this was estimated from the bottom of the profile. This is the lowest or the lower values of the profile. The time length was estimated from OSL dating again, and it's nearly 6,000 years. So this model ran daily for 6,000 years. Calcium carbonate flux was on the high end because the dust trap that held the highest amount of calcium carbonate was near this pit on. The volume compartment was a cubic centimeter, and the topographic index was a little bit higher than the mean at 8.94. And what we see is the on the y-axis at the top, we see the surface of the soil and down to 40 centimeter depth. High calcium carbonate values are in red, low calcium carbonate values are in dark blue, and the x-axis is time. So the sample ran for, the model ran for about 6,000 years. So what we see is a depth distribution of calcium carbonate as a function of depth. I'm sorry, as a function of time. And so initially, all the compartments have the same amount of calcium carbonate, and calcium carbonate is being removed from the surface as time progresses and being deposited lower into the profile as we would expect. The actual carbonate distribution is shown on the left. The green values are high calcium carbonate, and the blue values are low. And so we see that the predicted calcium carbonate spatial distribution of inorganic carbon storage follows the same trend as the actual carbonate distribution. Again, this is the Piedmont sample. When we compare the actual values against the predicted results, soil 1 and soil 3 did a fairly good job of predicting how much carbonate was stored in kilograms per square meter to a meter depth in those two soils. But soil 2 and soil 4 did a poor job in estimating that. There's a number of reasons for this. We think that the topographic index values are not adequately accounting for the amount of water that is moving across the landscape in this case. Soil 2, for example, we think that there's more water that's moving into that profile than the model is accounting for, and less in soil 4. So summary of the SLIC model is that it's a flexible approach for predicting soil inorganic carbon storage. It allows you to change compartment lengths and depths. It allows you to use at least three different data sets for CO2 concentrations in the soil and three different methods for calcium solubility calculations. It gives us a visual representation, perhaps it's just heuristic, but a visual representation of soil carbonate distribution with time. And obviously we need to do a better job of describing the topographic position, water redistribution relationship. Also, it'd be interesting to look at and quantify the flux distribution and treat that more explicitly in a spatial sense to know how much dust is moving across the landscape and where particularly it's moving. And also that each pedon is not trapping the same amount of dust, which is determined from surface characteristics, so the surface trapping potential. So with that, I just thank my field crew and funding sources. The range goes from atmospheric conditions right now, currently at, I forget the value, 0.003 atmospheres or so, to I think the highest values are about 0.04 atmospheres of concentration of CO2 to depth.
I assume we'll provide or produce different maps of calcium carbonate storage, right?
Right. No, that's right. The model was assumed to just follow the CO2 pressure of Terhune and Hardin in the southern Nevada soil. But what we did was I ran some simulations that were changing this, and it did show a different distribution, but it was all within the top meter. So the point of this was to try to find the amount of carbonate that's precipitating in that top meter, and that didn't really change. So.